Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Coming up on this episode of Killer Jeans Special Series, Part 3 of Was It Suicide or Was It Murder? The Death of Daniel Underwood. We break down the incomplete police investigation with a forensic expert.
Not one thing in particular, but the scene taken as a whole. And a medical examiner said that she ruled it was ruled a suicide because he had a shotgun blast in the mouth. Problem with that ruling is it doesn't tell me who pulled the trigger.
And a local investigative reporter digs even deeper.
So I got a hold of him. He told me I had a murder here, and there would have been residue on his other hand.
And after, did a Sulphur Springs resident get a murder confession from Daniel's girlfriend?
That's when she said, well, I'm under investigation for the murder of my ex-boyfriend. His crazy effing mother is trying to get me thrown in prison for killing him. But the cops here ruled it a suicide. And I said, well, what happened? And that's when she proceeded to tell me that she actually did blow his brains out. And I said, well, then why aren't you in jail?
The following episode of Killer Jeans contains graphic and sensitive information and material. Listener discretion is advised.
Emmy-nominated true crime journalists bring you cases like you've never heard them before. Hear firsthand accounts from the victims' families, private investigators, lawyers, law enforcement, and even the convicted. Giving you a complete 360 of the case like no one else can.
I'm Melissa McCarty.
I'm Kelly McClear.
And this is Killer Jeans.
33-year-old Texan Daniel Underwood was shot dead on Labor Day weekend of 2008. There were two other people in the Sulphur Springs home that night, Daniel's girlfriend Rebecca Nelson and their friend Maria Harvick. Rebecca called 911 and said Daniel had shot himself, but Daniel's family and friend Maria believe the shooting was at the hands of another.
Since Daniel Underwood's death was ruled a suicide by police, forensic experts have since come in to take a look at the evidence, or lack thereof. One such expert is Dr. Maurice Godwin, who specializes in investigative psychology and crime scene analysis, and he began working on the Underwood case in 2016.
What was your impression of the case file?
Poor job done by law enforcement.
Godwin goes on to list the failures he observed with the investigation.
Failure to keep a log entry book for those who entered and exited the home. Failure to cast impressions of the shoe print found in the hallway near the bedroom. Failure to take photographs of the exterior of the home from all sides. Failure to type the blood found in the various locations in the house. Failure to drain sinks in the various locations in the house for blood. Failure to examine the 90-degree blood spatter that was found down the hall. Failure to take scale crime scene photographs throughout the house. So that's about nine of them there.
He says the photos prove there was a struggle over the gun.
The gun was found at a little bit distance away from the door opening, and that's because that's where she dropped it. If he had been just holding the gun would have dropped under the door frame. That's one thing the photographs tell me about the scene.
I also thought it was interesting when looking at the photos is that there's blood spatter on the ceiling in the hallway,
yeah,
but there's not much of anything along the wall opposite of the door jamb. It's just the big pooling of blood on the floor. So to me, and I'm no expert like you are, but to me, that would be indicative of, say, Daniel leaning over or kneeling down. Is that a correct assumption?
That's correct. He had his head hanging down when the shot went off. And it was a glancing shot. Like it just caught the edge of his side of his face. and this blood spatter went upwards. That's the reason why that blood spatter was on the ceiling. You didn't see any blood spatter on the walls. That means the gun wasn't pointed straight. It was pointed like, it's more like a 90-degree angle.
So that's what you think that the officers failed to notice and to note in the police report?
They didn't do anything like that. They didn't do any kind of assessment concerning blood spatter.
Why do you think that is? Do you think it's because the way the 911 call came in?
Well, that, and I think they once they ruled it a suicide, which was soon after they got there, they ruled it a suicide, then they didn't treat it like a homicide. So they just treated it as a suicide. So there was no use to look at the blood spatter or anything like that because it wasn't a homicide.
As for the gunshot residue on Daniel?
It was found, he's right-handed, and it was found on his left hand.
That's right, on his left hand.
And he had that black, like, smear on his finger in the photos, I guess, indicating where he pulled the trigger, maybe? I don't know.
It was on his left hand, which could have come from holding the barrel, which what you would do in an argument, like you would do trying to control the gun. Trying to keep it away from you with your left hand. See, they were in an argument, a fight over the gun. So law enforcement is not in a position to tell you who pulled the trigger. That's the reason why this at a minimum should be changed to undetermined. The autopsy report should have been made undetermined even from the get-go. Because nobody knows who pulled the trigger.
But it was quickly ruled a suicide instead.
Dr. G, did it look to you that Daniel's body had been moved after he was shot?
Yeah, it had been moved.
How can you tell that by looking at the photos?
It had been slid downward toward the door opening. You can see where the back of the head, the blood on the back of the head, yes, when he's removed from the scene, you can see back where his skull is at. You can see smear marks on the floor.
Yeah, we're looking at the pictures while you're talking about this right now.
Yeah, and so you see how, so his body, some of his legs is in one room and the blood is leading into another room and his main portion of his body is in the hallway. So if the theory is right, for what his mom believes, let's say, would Rebecca have to have been in the bedroom where the tail end of his legs are grabbing
the
gun? Okay, got it. That's what the pictures. So the exchange, the battle over the gun was in the room as he was walking out.
Yeah, the room he's facing.
Did you find the position of his legs at all suspicious? You know, one knee is, his right knee is bent up pretty high and then the left one's kind of fallen to the side. Does that tell you anything about Daniel's position when he was shot? You know, was he standing up? Was he leaning over? Could he have been kneeling down?
Yeah, like a squat position, like he was in a squat position.
Oh, that leads me to my next question. The photo up above, looking at your very thorough, excellent report, it's Rebecca, and it looks like in a red top and maybe army color khaki pants or cargo pants. But anyway, it looks like there's heavier, thicker blood splatter from her waist down versus her waist up. So would that, if it's heavier on the waist down, would that indicate that it went off when he was crunched over, bent? Because that's the argument, right? Was he standing up? Was he hunched over?
That's right. Under that blood stain on her leg, she had a bad bruise on that leg that's most likely come from the butt of the gun.
Were you surprised when you received the case file and you analyzed the photos? Were you shocked that this was so quickly ruled a suicide? Because we're baffled at how... You know, obviously this isn't part of your investigation, but, you know, there's witnesses that say that Rebecca was the one that pulled the trigger. yet law enforcement is doing nothing about that information. So we have, you know, you saying it was definitely should have been at least ruled undetermined. I believe Dr. Cyril Weck has also weighed in, you know, saying this is absolutely a homicide. So were you very surprised when you received those case files to see a suicide ruling?
Yes, very much so, because they're basing that on nothing, really. They're not basing it on anything they found at the scene.
What's interesting about you and your expertise is you're really good at those cases that are in the gray area, right? Is it suicide or is it murder? And there is a protocol when you officers show up and it is a suicide. You're never supposed to look at it like a suicide. You always kind of take it as a homicide and then rule it out later.
It's treated like a homicide.
But I'm just referencing training here. Do you think it's lack of training that not all officers know when they arrive at accidents or suicides to stop and really investigate no matter what all the signs and people on scene are telling you, just to just assume it's a homicide and then rule it out? Or is it, do you find the opposite in your years of working these gray or murky cases?
Well, I think officers form their own opinions from the get-go. They form their own opinions.
That's not fair, right?
That's not. But some of them do. Some detectives do jump on the suicide bandwagon too quick. And a lot of cases are ruled suicide when they're not.
Was there a smoking gun evidence to you where you thought, well, this is clear as day? One thing that stood out the most to at least be ruled undetermined?
The scene taken as a whole. Not one thing in particular, but the scene taken as a whole. And a medical examiner said that she ruled it, that it was ruled a suicide because he had a shotgun blast in the mouth. And that's the reason why it was ruled a suicide. Problem with that ruling is it doesn't tell me who pulled the trigger.
Now it all falls on a new regime working at the Sulphur Springs Police Department, because Detective Fox is now retired. Police would have to give Dr. Jill Urban, the current medical examiner, permission to interview witness Maria Harvick and re-examine the crime scene, one she reportedly feels doesn't wholeheartedly prove suicide.
So you have this medical examiner who says, I am open to hearing the witness who recanted her story. I'm open to look at the totality of all the evidence to see about changing the cause of death. But my hands are tied unless law enforcement get involved as well. Law enforcement have never talked to us on this over the years. And to them, it's case closed. So what has to happen in your expertise to push this along when you have a willing medical examiner?
The easiest thing to get it changed is get it changed to undetermined rather than homicide. And we've got to make the point is that they can't prove that Daniel pulled the trigger.
In your expert opinion, who do you believe pulled that trigger?
I believe she did.
And would you be willing, if it ever does go to any sort of trial or grand jury, would you be willing to testify regarding your findings?
Yeah.
You feel that strongly that it absolutely did not happen the way investigators say it happened?
Yes, I believe that she pulled the trigger because she's got a bruise on her leg from the butt of the gun.
Regarding the bruise on her leg, Rebecca said it was from them having sex, not from the gun. Hey, Killer Jeans listeners, we want to take a minute to talk to you about something you might be neglecting, and that is your mental health.
Now, do you know about BetterHelp? That's Better H-E-L-P, and it's an amazing online therapy service that lets you talk to licensed professional therapists any day, anytime, and in any way that you want.
The online therapists can help you with whatever you may be going through. Maybe you're not sleeping very well, or you're stressed out at work. I know I am. Or even in your relationships. BetterHelp is more affordable than traditional therapy.
And you know what, Melissa, for me, what I like best about BetterHelp is that they'll match me with the therapist that fits my needs and help me to plan sessions that work with my schedule.
Yeah, timing is everything, especially having that right connection. So go ahead and join over 2 million people that have started to take charge of their mental health with the experienced professionals at BetterHelp.
Killer Jeans is sponsored by BetterHelp. And the cool part is our listeners get 10% off their first month of online therapy at betterhelp.com/killerjeans. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/killerjeans. Someone else that has researched and covered the mysterious death of Daniel Underwood is Joe Cochran. Cochran is an investigative reporter that covers the Sulphur Springs area and other nationwide stories. In his opinion, something about this case doesn't add up.
You know, and you guys can probably agree with this. There's times where you get involved in something, especially something this big. A young man lost his life in his prime and was getting his life really back on track. I would wake up at night thinking, what about this case? You know, I mean, then I looked at the pictures. Now, there's a lot of difference between Daniel and I, but there was, you know, he's kind of, if you look at our pictures up close when I had longer hair, it reminded me of myself. And I just thought, I am so obsessed with this case. There's something not right here. And then as I got to know Donna, I thought, you know, there's got to be something here. So I spent 5 months on it before. And I want everybody to know, I wasn't paid by anybody. When I worked with you before, Melissa, I haven't taken any money for this case. This is one I'm doing for absolute free because it is in my heart and in my mind. And I looked at all the evidence. Then I went to my specialist. I don't know if you guys know Dr. Sarah Weck, the longtime.
Absolutely. Legend.
Yeah, he is just on. He and I are very good friends. I can call him on anything. And he wrote me some stuff up on this case. But he's done tons of autopsies. And so I got a hold of him. He told me I had a murder here and there would have been residue on his other hand. There was residue on one hand, but not the other, knowing that, you know, what hand he was. So
are you referring to the fact that he was right-handed and the residue was on the left?
Yeah.
And because, I mean, should we go into that right now? Because, you know, Kelly brought up an interesting point looking at all sides, you know, maybe he was holding the gun with his strong hand.
Well, I was thinking, you know, and I didn't realize this, but Donna had brought up, I'm sorry, we're skipping around a little bit, but
that's okay.
Donna had brought up a good, something that I didn't quite know was that the shotgun was a legal sawed off shotgun with a barrel of about 18 and a half inches. So, and then if you couple that with the stock, it's definitely within an arm's reach to be able to pull the trigger. So just to play devil's advocate here, what if he was using his dominant hand to steady the barrel of the gun and then use his left hand to pull the trigger?
That's what I like about you guys. It's a great, great question, and it's a fair question. I thought of that, but as I went over some of the other evidence and in my first article I wrote on here, I did try to reach out to her, could not find Rebecca Nelson. I found an eyewitness who said that she pulled the trigger. And
you're referring to Maria?
Maria Harvick.
Joe screened Maria's credibility and the whispers of Rebecca being a police informant. If you recall, Rebecca said during her police interview, she helped Detective Fox on a past case, giving tips. That sounds like an informant, unless she was a witness to that prior case. But an eyewitness wouldn't be giving tips. She'd be giving an eyewitness account.
And if you watch the interview, she also mentions to, I believe it's Bo Fox, in the it could be somebody from the Texas Rangers, I'm not sure, said that she had given him a lot of evidence, a lot of information, and turned into a lot of people. So we put it all together, and from what she had told Maria earlier, I don't hate to use the word police informant, but she had given them a lot of dirt on people. And Maria thought, there's going to be no way out of this. The girl do me bodily harm. My kids are in trouble. And she's got it in with the police. Where do I go with this? And I think this came up when I talked to you before, Melissa, that she was, I hate to use the word informant, but had given them a lot of stuff. And if you look at the, and I know the viewers can't see that right now, the interview, the police interview, it wasn't like an interrogation. It's more like a tea party. And the stuff that she was admitting to, changing her story compared to the 911 call, it's just quite interesting.
Did you try to ask detectives if she was an informant?
All my calls to Sulphur Springs Police Department were never returned. And as far as they were concerned, this case was closed. I could not get anybody to talk. I went up and down the rank, thought maybe there would be somebody on the inside. I had some other people who do police work, if they could make some connections for me, you know, former police officers themselves, not in Sulphur Springs, but elsewhere. And we couldn't get anywhere. So I went with the story. And Rebecca Nelson told me that I would be sued. She didn't tell me. She put it in a Facebook message, and I would be hearing from lawyers. It's been 7 years. These lawyers are moving awfully slow.
Hey, Melissa.
Yes.
Do you know what the favorite part of my day is?
What would that be?
That is when I play June's Journey. I am obsessed. I wake up in the morning and I grab my phone to collect my coins and start playing. My coffee and June's Journey is my morning routine. I kid you not, every morning. And to be honest, I play multiple times throughout the day.
I know you're obsessed, but for me, I like to do it at night, more of a winding down kind of thing. But for all of you out there that have not heard about June's Journey just yet, you have to check it out. It's hands down one of the best clue finding games out there. The story follows June Parker as she sets out on a series of events. It's a whodunit of sorts to help solve the case.
And, you know, being in true crime, it's a great way to not only wind down, like you said, but it helps to keep, I know me personally, my observation and my memory skills sharp. And, you know, within the game, there's all sorts of great ways to get more coins and power, and you get to keep playing through the different levels and chapters, which is awesome because once you start, you'll be hooked.
It is the perfect game for all fans of true crime, even the true crime hosts. And you get to help June solve cases, all while mixing it up with intrigue, stimulating visuals, and romance.
Oh, yeah. The storylines in the cases are so cool. You know, the visuals, like you said, are outstanding. And you even get to build your old island where you can help solve crimes. And you know what? If you're one of the over 30 million downloads and see killer genes, that's me. So download the game today and try to beat my high score.
So are you ready to awaken your inner detective? Just download June's Journey free today on the Apple App Store or Google Play.
Joe, do you think that the case of Daniel Underwood's death is one of a couple of things? One, shoddy police work, or quick to make judgment police work. Two, not enough information from the witnesses that were there the night of the death, meaning conflicting stories so you don't know what's what. Or three, that Rebecca is possibly an informant, therefore we have a cover-up. And if there's a fourth option, please do tell.
No, those are great options. I believe one and three. I believe it was very shoddy. I mean, I thought it made the O.J. Simpson case look very well done. It was horrible. The interview was horrible. Blood all over the, you know, she's asking about credit cards and wallets. I mean, who does these things, especially if it's not somebody you're related to and your relationship has pretty much gone to hell, you might as well say. And of course, I just think that it's definitely a cover up. I think she does know a few things, and I think there's a worry there. How, you know, eventually this will probably open up because these people are going to be retired eventually at Sulphur Springs and somebody's going to step up.
Well, Detective Fox is already retired and I reached him the other day and he said no comment and that his ruling and opinion on the case stands. However, in speaking of Detective Fox, I have to reference that interview caught on video, captured by police, of Rebecca being scorned and then released. After admitting she erased and wiped his cell phone clean. What did you make of that?
I mean, it almost brings me to tears because that's got to make Donna Underwood flip out. Not only that, and I'm going to paraphrase, Maria told me in my interview with her that she said, don't say anything. I know the police. I'll take care of this. And then she had also done some moving stuff around and rolling Daniel around. Then you talk about wiping off evidence. I mean, what does that tell you? I mean, this just, and you know, we'll get along in it further. I have another witness along the way, what you know about Melissa. And that made me write part two of my story. But that made my skin just curl. And when you asked me that, it made chills go down my spine again.
Maria Harvick is open about giving misinformation to police the night of Daniel's death. But she said it was because she was afraid of Rebecca. Within weeks, she recanted her story to law enforcement.
I think it was like 2 weeks after the initial interview where we gave our statement. It was like 2 weeks after that when they did the second interview with me. And that's when I told them the truth. And they never called me again. They never followed up with me again. I found out later that Rebecca was called to do a polygraph test. Because she called me to ask me if they had called me to do one, and I told her no. And I said, did they call you? And she said yes. And I asked her if she was going to do it, and she told me yes. She said she was. And so after all that time, I thought she had, because I had run into her again, and she said that she had did it. I didn't find out till later from Miss Donna that she never did do it.
And Maria, don't answer this question if you don't know it, but did you ever hear from anyone or Rebecca that she was an informant with police at all?
No, I didn't hear it from her, but I did hear it in around town.
So you had, you know, you said Sulphur Springs is a very small town. You mm-hmm. did see her around town in the years, months and years following. Did you guys have any mm-hmm. other conversations about what happened that night? Or have you since drifted very far apart?
No, I never really spoke to her when I would run into her. I tried to avoid her because when I saw her that next day, she had went to the bar and was trying to pawn and like sell all of his things in the bar that she had got from the house that night.
Just what was Rebecca up to in the days and weeks after Daniel's death? Investigative journalist Joe Cochran knows the Underwood family still has a long road ahead of them and more questions to Rebecca need to be answered.
Joe, what do you think it's going to take to get answers in this case?
It's going to have to take somebody between Sulphur Springs Police Department with the autopsy, along hopefully they could get somebody with the Texas Rangers involved. But Donna doesn't hold much truth out there. But I think it's going to have to be somewhere with Sulphur Springs getting a little bit of pressure on them. They had, I mean, you guys, listen, you pushed. You got as much pressure on them as you could. You did a wonderful job. I think it's going to take some real outside pressure. Donna needs to really continue to push. And that's hard to say because she's already done a lot of work. And I'm not getting that from Bo Fox. I mean, I just wonder, how do you sleep, Bo? How do you sleep? I mean, somebody lost someone here. And not only that, they lost him in a very graphic way. A guy who was really putting his life back together, getting reconnected with his kids, and just a lot of different things. And for her to change her story two or three times, it was an accident, it was suicide, he was on his knees, he was standing up. Everything changes in this. And it's just like, am I really watching a movie here? It's almost like this can't be real life.
Coming up in the final episode of our special series, looking into the death of Daniel Underwood, another witness comes forward with damaging evidence against Rebecca.
That's when she said, well, I'm under investigation for the murder of my ex-boyfriend. And I said, well, then why aren't you in jail?
What will police do with this information? And is this a confession? Thanks, everyone, for listening. Follow Killer Jeans on Facebook and on Instagram. It's at Killer Jeans, the podcast.
Also, be sure to like and subscribe to Killer Jeans on Podcast One, Apple, or wherever you listen to podcasts.